Welcome to the concluding episode, episode 16 of In the Garden. Bring up your favorite beverage. Mine is a glass of lemon tea, and enjoy this final installment of our time in Gan Eden. Appropriately, if you look over my left shoulder, you will see my wife's addition to this garden, a beautiful, almost man-size hollyhock that she has grown in her garden that she brought in, especially for this, the concluding part of our program. And as a reminder, we returned to the garden these 15 now episodes ago for the express purpose of going back to the future, or going back to the past to learn our future. God wants us to know what He is providing for us, what He views as a good time, what He has in store for His covenant family. And the best way to know that is to examine everything that can be gleaned from the time in the garden, where Yahweh created Adam as a companion, as someone to raise, someone whose company he could enjoy, as someone, most importantly, that he could share every aspect of creation with, from himself to the beauty of this garden and its natural flora and fauna, to the animals that he brought for the two of them to enjoy, and then to the love and marvel of man and woman being together and being all that they can be, augmenting one another, creating this marvelous synergism that is head and heart. So Yahweh conceived this garden without religion, without politics, without any militarism. There was no caste system. And in this garden, it was just one-on-one communication between Yahweh and man. God speaking to us, us listening, and communicating back, enjoying one another's company, even choosing to be together, because God did everything he could to make certain that Adam and then Chawa had an opt-out, a way to say, you know, we want either more than just God. We want an alternative to God. We want to be gods ourselves. We want to control the script. We wish to compose our own instructions. And so that was the purpose, not only of the tree of the knowledge of good and bad, but also of the instruction not to eat of it, that all of the other trees of the garden were nourishing and beneficial, just that there was a consequence associated with that one, which would bring things into the equation that were not particularly appropriate or enjoyable, at least at this point in their existence. And so he even allowed the serpent, who was formerly a cherub, a cherub, one of the Malach assigned the responsibility of protecting that which Yahweh values, in this case, protecting the garden, protecting Adam and Chawa inside. He allowed him to come off the wall and to misquote his testimony and to allow Chawa and then Adam to make the most grievous mistake of their lives as they chose to rely on a misappropriation, a misciting, an out of context and errant rendering of Yahweh's testimony and their own embellishments to it, which is the essence of the Christian New Testament, the Talmud and the Quran, and to be beguiled thereby. So we have now reached the point where Yahweh has delineated the consequence of that choice, of the choice not to listen to what he has to say and respond appropriately. That choice has been to be excluded from the garden. And so he has walked each of these three individuals that were participants in this errant maneuver, Adam, Chawa, and the serpent, the Nakash, representing Satan, to the door. And we have read, first of all, what Yahweh asked of them. He began the process by telling them that there would be no, there would be an opportunity for them to come clean, an opportunity for them to convey what was a sense of responsibility, for them to say, yes, we failed to listen to what you had to say. We didn't think about it. We didn't respect it. We chose a different interpretation, and we made a terrific, horrific mistake. We apologize for it. And they likely would have been able to go on had they done so. But no, Adam, remember, had every which way to blame everyone but himself. He blamed God twice. He says, you gave me the woman. And then he says, you made the woman improperly because she was supposed to help me. And look at now, she's hurt me. So God, you should never have given her to me. And if you were going to give her to me, you should have made her better than she was. That didn't fly with Yahweh. And then he blamed Chawa herself, saying, she gave it to me to eat and I ate it. There's no sense of accountability there. You know, I've been doing this for 23 years. I'm the first to put thousands of unique insights together so that you could see the entire picture, including that the Gan Eden represents where Yahweh is taking us through the Moed Mikre, where we end up after we've gone through Passover's door, been cleansed by the welcome mat of matzah, then adopted into God's family on Bikurim, have been enriched and empowered on Shavuah, so that we could serve as heralds of God's message on Teruah, and thereby welcome our King and our God home on Bikurim, all leading us to the opportunity to camp out with Yahweh in the earth restored to conditions enjoyed in Eden on Sukkah. This is the path. I'm the first to present it as such. I'm the first to date all the steps along that way and explain who fulfilled them or will fulfill them so that you would be able to enjoy camping out with us. And I'm the first to explain how the conditions of Eden made all of this that God enjoys possible and how different they are from the world that exists today outside of Eden. And so it is important that you understand and appreciate the fact that these are insights that have never been previously heralded, and you're hearing them here for the first time, because now is the time for you to know what God is offering and what he expects from us in return. It's also important for you to know how HaSatan operates and how he twists Yahweh's testimony because he isn't creative, how he counterfeits the things that are important to God, again, because he has no ability to be creative, and counterfeits are designed to be very similar to the genuine article, and yet they remain criminal and fraudulent and of no actual value. But that is what happened in the garden. We have examined every aspect of it so that we might come to appreciate all the nuances that can be learned from this word picture of a very real example of where a wonderful relationship with Yahweh fell apart. Now, it is also important to understand as we return to this final two statements that transpire in proximity to the garden, that Adam and Chawa were living in God's home here on earth. They were obviously perceived by Yahweh to be part of his family. He acted in a fatherly role with them. They were very close. They spent considerable time together. They learned from one another. They enjoyed one another's company. And then they didn't. And that's very important for you to understand. Because there are lots of people who think that because they were once involved in the covenant family, as we are reaching out on behalf of Yahweh to his people and calling them home at this time, that they could go off and go someplace else and still be welcomed home. That is not the case. Once you walk out that door, there's no coming back. Adam and Chawa were never invited back in. They were escorted out of the garden because of the choices they had made. They wanted things to be different than they were. They wanted additional knowledge. What could be wrong with that? They wanted to speak for a God that they represented. What could be wrong with that? Well, God has the answer to what's wrong with that. Expulsion. There's the door. Don't let it hit you on the fanny on the way out, because you're not coming back. And that's a very important lesson that I think very few people have understood. Would also be true as we transition to Noah and the flood. And while I hope to be able to explain some of the wonderful insights we can glean from it, if you were not aboard the ark when it was first began to rise above the floodwaters that began, as Yahweh said, with a deep upwelling of seawater, with the Berkel impact crater that caused it, causing a giant tsunami of water and all the sediment that comes with it to rush up the mouth of the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, ultimately ending up turning the Black Sea, which was freshwater at the time and had these civilizations that Yahweh was most annoyed by. He described them as Hamas, violent, terroristic, living on the shores, and it buried them under 500 feet of salt water at that moment in time. And Yahweh wanted a fresh start. And anyone who was not aboard that ark at that time in that area, their lives were ended. There was no coming back. And if you jumped off of the ark at that time, there'd be no door for reentry. And so these are important lessons. And we have gone through Chawa's response as well. Hers was even worse than Adam's. She had done worse than Adam, far worse than Adam, actually. Rather than simply taking the fruit and eat it, Chawa wanted to speak for God. She wanted to be a god in her own right, a goddess. She twisted the words of God to make her case. And then she managed to beguile Adam into joining her. These are very troubling things, particularly when we consider what has recently transpired. Some people who decided to walk away and rebel in our midst, all to promote a Lebrus Goyim Motherite cult, so that they could speak for God, so they could twist his testimony and his name to suit their agenda. There are lessons in everything God conveys, and sometimes those lessons only become apparent to us when it's time for us to know them. So after pronouncing the sentences on Hasatan, on Chawa and Adam, and as a quick review, Hasatan's primary sentence was that he would be diminished. He was a Karub, which means that he was brilliant. He was vastly more empowered than any human. I mean, E equals MC squared. He was energy and we are matter. And so he was infinitely, well, if you want to use the exact equation, he was the speed of light times the speed of light, more powerful than humans. And he was far more brilliant. I'd been around a much longer period of time, would be around a much longer period of time too. That his sentence is that he would devour dirt, the elements of the earth. And it's the very thing that made mortal man out of, the elements of the earth. He became a predator of humans. And I went through the religious lore that predicts and presents him as such. And we should never forget that. That is why Satan exists. He wants to be the god of religion to devour humans. And we went from there to understanding what he said about Chawa. That Chawa would be more heart than head. That her longings for her man would overwhelm her. And that her role in conceiving and bearing children, raising them, would be difficult. It would consume her. It would be a struggle. And it does not say that man would rule over woman. It says that they would actually grow together, with the man providing word pictures that the woman would understand, such that they could live their lives effectively, now alone, outside of the garden. Now, this is the sentence that Yahweh pronounced on Adam, the first man created with an Asama in his image. We went through it on our last program, but in that, this is the concluding program of In the Garden, episode 16. I wanted to reprise it. To Adam, he said, because you have listened to the voice of your woman, Isha, and have eaten from the tree, which for the benefit of the relationship and to get the most joy out of life, I directed you, saying, do not make a habit of eating from it, that you did. So the earth has been cursed and has become annoying. In other words, this thing that in the garden had been so beneficial, so enjoyable, Eden means great joy, it's now going to be difficult. It's going to inflict injury. It's going to be vexating. There's times where it's going to be infuriating for you. And this is this way because of you, God said. You will labor, engaging in strenuous work. It's a bone. By the way, this is the same word that Yahweh used to describe the challenge of raising children when he applied it to Chawa, the Isha woman. So it doesn't mean labor pains. Not unless both of them were going to get pregnant, I guess. You know, you never know with today's non-binary world. You will labor, engaging in strenuous work to consume of it. Speaking of the land, you're going to have to produce your own food. I provided it previously. It was a gift. Now you're going to have to derive your own all the days of your lives. Chaya. Atta. This then leads to the concluding comment that we will share. Thorn bushes, detestable and loathsome, non-bearing fruit, vegetation and abhorrent, disgusting and irritating plants, twisted and splinter-like, and thistles, prickly plants, which are of no value and used to goad. These things are the weeds of religion and politics. They are the very things that have permeated our earth and have choked out the productive seeds that Yahweh has sown through Moshe and Dod and through his prophets, that are just now being cultivated such that the weeds of heresy are being pulled, and that you have the chance to know the truth, because the productive plants are growing again. They're about to be harvested. The thorn bushes representing religion and the thistles of politics are finally being culled. So thorn bushes and thistles it will produce, and boy has it ever, as you approach and consume the plants of the open environs. We were also told that outside of the gardens, now speaking of the open environs, is where Hasatan would dwell. He does not dwell in darkness. He does not hide out in satanic seances. He's right out in the open. You'll find him in any church, synagogue, or mosque. He is the Lord of religion. This goes on to say, the sweat of your brow, by the sweat of your brow, you shall feed yourself until you return to the ground, because from it you were taken. We are reminded that man comes from the earth, Adama. It is the very depiction of the Adama Parah that will cleanse this mud off of Yisrael in the last days. So from the earth to the earth, it's often called dust to dust, but it is really the natural particles that comprise the earth, is how we were conceived physically, and it is to them that we will be taken physically, which is a way to say that our soul, which resides in these physical bodies of ours, that when our physical body begins to decay and our soul is removed, both decay. Our bodies turn into, well, worm rot. That's just the bottom line of it. I don't care what you do in terms of trying to protect your body. I don't care how fancy a casket that you can have, how good the embalmer. Our bones, our flesh, rots away. It begins to decay as we grow older, and then as we die, it deteriorates very rapidly. It's one of the reasons why the notion of bodily resurrection in Christianity, Islam, and to an extent even in Judaism, is so ludicrous. My body, your body, is comprised of bodies of other animals that have passed away long before us. It's recycled physical life. And there is nothing left, nothing to resurrect, much less why would you reanimate something that is rotten, that has decayed, that is so limiting. It's our physical bodies that limit our access to dimensions beyond the third. We can't maneuver in time. We can't climb to through the fourth, fifth, and sixth dimensions and reach the seventh dimension of Shamaim with physical bodies. We need to be transformed into light and energy, which is why Yahweh uses the metaphor of fire. It consumes that which is decaying in the physical world and transforms it into energy and light. And so if you are apart from God, it is from the earth to the earth. Your body decays, and so does your soul, ceasing to exist. There's no penalty. There is no reward. And that's another lesson that most people miss. In the religions of Christianity and Islam, there is this whole fixation on either go to heaven by obeying God's rules, or you go to hell. Now, anybody with half a functioning brain cell recognizes that a God would say, you obey me or I'm going to torture you forever, is like Allah, and therefore akin to a sadistic demon. No one wants to spend any time around a pretend God that would say such a thing. And it isn't true. First of all, the Quran's most repeated warning is that Allah is in hell and that he's going to physically torture the physical bodies of all who did not capitulate to him and kill other human beings on his behalf. He's going to roast them over his fires. He is going to make them drink boiling water. He is going to throw pitch on them. He is going to make them chew on thorn bushes such as these. And Allah is only depicted in hell, and he is forever threatening this. But there are no physical bodies in Sheol, which is the place of separation. There is no fire, there is no light there either, although there will be Allah. And Shama Aim is the same. It having a physical body would bar entry. First of all, they can't be perfected. And second of all, they would preclude entering a dimension beyond our own, and physical bodies are defy the possibility of being immortal. And so this notion in the Quran that Allah's killers are going to be rewarded with multiple virgins that they will get to conquer in paradise, I mean, it's so stupid, it hurts. But Christianity and Islam, man, there's only the two extremes. And yet, for God to be moral, and for you to know the God that inspired these words in the Torah, he begs to differ. He says, no, the vast majority of you came from the earth. You were naturally born. You're going to die the same way. You're going to return to the earth. Your soul is going to cease to exist. For you, there is no reward. There is no punishment. You were given the opportunity to live. You were offered in many cases, but certainly not all, a nasama, so that you had both a nefesh soul to observe and respond to your environment and a nesama conscience so that you could make rational, informed, moral, and just decisions, of which today has been forfeited by somewhere around 99% of the population of this earth, and it may be 99.99% of the population of this earth has so underutilized and so crippled their nesama conscience that it's just no longer functional. And without it, there is no way back to God. So what God is saying here to Adam and to Chawa is that you were created of the dirt of the earth, the natural materials of the earth, and that's where you're headed. I gave you life. I gave you free will. I gave you a conscience. You squandered them. The time that you lived is the full extent of your life. There'll be nothing more. There would, however, need to be a way back to God's family, into his home. And the rest of the story, as presented in the Torah, particularly as we began the story of Noah and the flood and its rendition of the covenant, and then the narration of the covenant with Abraham and Sarah, in terms of its five terms and five conditions, five terms and conditions, I should say, and five benefits. And then as they are lived out and explained to Moshe in Yahweh's Torah guidance, and then enabled by Yahweh's relationship with his son, Dod David, and now explained and proclaimed for you to understand and respond to by Yahweh's voice at this time, we do have a way back. And sharing that with you has been the purpose of these programs. But understand that there are two other destinations for human souls besides ceasing to exist, which is the vast majority of them. Shamaim, which is God's home, the seventh dimension, is being offered to those who have listened to Yahweh, who embrace Yahweh's name, who are reacquainted with his son, his Messiah, our Savior, Dod, who is corrupted now to be David and robbed of all of these glorious attributes because he fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim, which enable us to rejoin God's family. And this provides us, particularly when we follow through on each of the Moed Mikre, in full acceptance of the five conditions of the covenant, which are to disassociate from religion and politics, to walk away from Babel, to no longer be integrated into the culture and family of man. Two, such that we walk to Yahweh and allow him to perfect us. This is accomplished on Matzah, when Dod takes our guilt into Sheol to deposit it there, never to be seen again. and that as a result, we come to trust and rely upon Yahweh. Of course, this means that we have to come to know him. And we have to understand what he is offering and expects in return. We do these things by observing his Torah teaching. This then leads to God asking us to closely examine and carefully consider all of the instructive terms and conditions, benefits of the covenant, so we know exactly what is expected of us and what is being offered to us, so that we can make an informed decision to be part of his bereth. And then as a sign that we understand what we have committed to do and that we're willing as parents to raise our children so that they have the opportunity to make this same choice, we're asked to circumcise our sons, the sign of the covenant, showing that we are separated and different and distinct. And we understand the role our children play in conveying to us Yahweh's role as father of the covenant, so that we should circumcise our sons on the eighth day, speaking of eternity and of new life. These are the terms and conditions of the covenant that would allow us to be part of God's family. Now, for those who corrupt any of this, corrupt Yahweh's name, counterfeit his son so that someone else is perceived, a Jesus Christ, a Bar Kokhba, a Muhammad, is perceived as the Messiah, who write a different agenda, as is found in the Talmud, in the New Testament, in the Quran, who mislead God's people, or who do what Roman Catholics did for years and subjugate and abuse God's people, demonize them. Christianity actually begins by demonizing Jews, stealing their birthright. And of course, Islam exists to kill Jews. And so if you are affiliated with these things, then if you promote these things, if you act upon these things, then Sheol is for you. It is a place of eternal separation. God is not there, unlike Allah. There are no fires. There are no tortures. They're just eternal incarceration and darkness where nothing escapes. Those are your three choices. That's why there were three doors on the Ark, all reemphasized, is why there are three eras of 40 Obel periods, from the time we were escorted out of the garden to the time we're allowed to return. This is because you are a collection of particles comprising matter, Yahweh told Adam, and into the elements which comprise the earth you shall return. And therein is the point that the religious who claim this book as their own, which would be Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, all missed. God did not speak of eternal separation in hell here, did he? He did not speak of fiery tortures, did he? What he said is for the vast majority of people, those who follow in Adam's and Chawa's footsteps, those who do not listen to God and act upon what he said, those who would prefer to either change what God said or listen to someone else who has changed what God has said, as would be the case in the Talmud, the New Testament, and Quran, with the likes of Paul, Akiba, and Muhammad, that if you are the victim of these things, you are like Adam and you say, you know, she gave it to me, I ate it, I didn't even think about it, you know, so what? And so what is your soul and your body dissipate into nothingness? So what? Indeed. To earn the greater, the only punishment, because that's not a punishment, it's a consequence, to actually earn the punishment of eternal separation, which is a recompense for having done what Hasatan did. Well, that will send you your soul to Sheol, but you have to do what Hasatan did and advance deceptions, deliberately seek to harm humanity, particularly God's children. Therefore, they were being escorted out of Eden to a world filled with thorns and thistles, religion and politics. We call these abhorrent and irritating things, that which chokes out the truth, keeps the good seed from going, precluding an abundant harvest. They are indeed religion and politics. They are the two most common things that exist in our world today and have for the last 6,000 years. Keep in mind, this all occurred 8.5 years shy of 6,000 years ago. We are very soon going to reach year 6,000 Yah, 2033 CE. They are the goads also to control. Paul mentioned the goad. He said it was in his side as he was demon-possessed and controlled by Satan. Even in his first revelation, he said that he acknowledged that it is difficult to kick against the goad. He claimed that his God told him that. And the fact is that that's a line from Euripides' play. Dionysus is the main character. And as the advocate of religion, Dionysus says, you know, if you want to buck religion, if you want to go against the Greek God that was served as the model for the Christian Jesus, the one who died and resurrected each year, that it's going to be difficult. It's hard to go against the crowd. It's hard to go against that goad in your side. Paul and his conversion experience from murderer of individuals and their physical bodies to murderers of billions of souls quoted the line and applied it to his wannabe God. So to find God amongst the thistles and briars now, then to cultivate a productive relationship with him, as is the job of the final Zoroa, it is challenging. And I have to begin this process not by just simply proclaiming the truth, because it is buried under so many religious lies, people have a tough time even processing it. So I have to begin by clearing away the weeds, which is why God asked me to begin with the most prickly weed of all, Islam, and then to condemn the most pervasive of weeds, Christianity, and the most damaging of bristles to his people's benefit, Judaism, so that once these things were renounced, the truth would be visible again. So we have to clear away these invasive species that are cluttering the path, because they have diminished the light. They have depleted the soil of nutrients. They have choked out the lush pastures Yahweh intended for his sheep, his flock, to graze, replacing them with the twisted and tangled environment that we call civilization. Man was conceived to be special, but now he had become common. His value had fallen from being the apple of God's eyes to just another transient being in the cycle of life. Humanity was now the sum of our parts. Some worth far less than that. In the garden, Yah provided nourishment, but Adam and Chawa chose to trade that gift for a chance to rise in stature. It had the opposite effect, of course, diminishing man and woman. And that is the message being conveyed in these words. What may have sounded like an overreaction at first glance, from the proper perspective, is now obviously appropriate. When we allow Yahweh to care for us, we become more like him. We grow. We are nurtured. We mature. We have value. We become more like him. But when we try to elevate ourselves and compete with him, when we tend to chase after gods no bigger than ourselves, consider pagan statuary and the monotheistic Hashem, Jesus, and Allah as examples, horrible things happen. Religion happens. And in religion, there is no relationship with Yahweh. He is not even known. He's not even considered. Now man must work to produce his own sustenance, and even then he begins life ostracized from Yah's company. We have to find our way back. And in the last 6,000 years, there have been very few who have pointed the way back home. Moshe played a starring role. So did Dodd. And now that responsibility falls on me. And is why I am asking to be invited into your home and to have access to you, such that you invest the time to listen to what God wants you to know. We begin our life in a religious and political milieu, estranged from God, hostile to God. And he is calling us out of it, word by word, so that you might know the truth, so that you might return to the Gan Eden. Born apart, we can now come to know God. We can accept his generosity. We can camp out with him. And while that way was covered up and choked out by weeds for 6,000 years, it is being made available to you now in the nick of time. 15 months from the Shavuot harvest, 8.5 years from Teruah, Kippurim, and a return to the Garden of Sukkah. We can also choose the opposite approach. We can listen to religious and political men. We can rely on their promises. And we can see where that takes the unwary. But I can assure you, those who yell Allahu Akbar to torture, rape, plunder, and kill Jews are not headed to where they think they're going. Those who are part of the religious cult conceived by Paul and Peter to degrade and demean Jews, to rob God's son by counterfeiting the Messiah and Son of God and Savior as the misnomer Jesus Christ, are in serious trouble. Very few things are as offensive to God as what Christianity has done. And of course, then there is Judaism, where rabbis not only created Christianity and, to a very large extent, Islam. Without their lies promoting the false Messiah Bar Kokhba to hide the truth about the real Messiah Dodd, Christianity doesn't exist, the diaspora would not have happened. The Holocaust would not have occurred. The father of rabbinic Judaism brought this upon you. And had they not written the Babylonian Talmud, there would have been no Quran, because they sold recitals of it to Muhammad. This is the truth. The greatest threat to the souls of Yehudim over these past 2,000 years has been rabbis. The moral of the story is that without God, we are insignificant. We are as macroevolutionary theory describes us as an ordinary animal, a temporal arrangement of matter whose journey from dust to dust is a short one. This is one very simple story. We're afforded the proper perspective on life with Yahweh, or the wrong one without him. It is a paradox, of course. Yahweh cannot have both a loving relationship with us if he leaves us no choice but to accept his return and accept and return his affection. You know, if we are put into a situation where it is love God or be tormented forever, if we're put in a situation where God is the only option, then we have no choice. We have no free will. And without free will, there cannot be a loving relationship. So this is why God created the scenario that we witnessed in the garden. Without it, there is nothing but involuntary servitude. What the Quran claims are slaves to Allah. But empowered with choice, we can accept a relationship with our God and be nourished by it, or we can choose separation or even indifference. In the Garden of Eden, God began by providing a simple way to choose between these options. Do anything you want. Just know that if you eat from the fruit of this one tree, life as you know it will end. There will be, or there were back at in that presentation, no edicts, there were no orders, there were no commandments, just some good direction and sound guidance. We are given and retain the liberty to accept or reject Yahweh's instructions and teaching to this day. We can even change and corrupt it, as HaSatan did, as Paul did, as Akiba did, as Muhammad did, but not without enduring consequences. The first couple and Yahweh communicated joyfully and productively in paradise for decades, and then based upon errant information and augmenting the and subtracting from what God had said, they did as humankind has been prone to do and made a very poor decision based upon erroneous information. While it did not surprise Yahweh, of course, it saddened him. Knowing it was going to happen, Yahweh had devised a remedy. There would be an antidote for the toxicity of the misleading words humans spew and ingest. To restore our souls, Yahweh would allow the willing sacrifice of his beloved son's temporal body on Pesach to extend our lives and then support the ever greater sacrifice that Dod made on Matzah to take our guilt with him and his soul into Sheol to deposit it there, never to be seen again, making us look perfect. God had a plan. He knew of that plan on this day. And he would enact that plan over the next 6,000 years. Bringing it to our attention in year 2000, Yah, 1968 BCE. Year 4000, Yah, 33 CE. And have it come to culmination in year 6000, Yah, 2033 CE. Fulfilling and foretelling, explaining the seven Moed Mikre along the way. So how are you going to respond? What are you going to do with this gift? Are you going to embrace it? Are you going to toss it away? Are you going to believe those who have written on behalf of the serpent and somehow believe that it is okay to augment, to change, to convolute, even to contradict the word of God if you claim to be speaking for him, and be a practitioner of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam? or are you going to accept the conditions of the covenant? Attend the Moed Mikre. Accept Yahweh's name. Embrace his beloved son for what he did to bring us back and to become part of God's family and live in his home. Those are your choices. And the benefits of making the right one are to inherit all God has to give, the entire universe, to bask in his presence and his love forevermore, to be part of his eternal family, to be perfected and empowered by him, to be enriched by him, enlightened and emancipated, able to transverse this entire universe and explore it, having an eternity of joy. Well, this is the conclusion of our program on the Yahweh blog. I thank you very much for listening to this episode, the final episode, number 16 of In the Garden. This has been the Yahweh blog. I am Craig Wynn. I thank you for listening.